Thank you, Vijayamati, and thank you for asking. It's always a great delight to enter the zone of preparing a Dharma talk and then bring the reflections and the practice here and share it with the Sangha friends. It's just really enlivening. So thank you very much. I'm delighted. And thank you for coming today. So when the bubble bursts, the UK referendum on the country's membership with the European Union took place exactly a month ago. And as a European citizen, I wasn't able to vote. Part of me thought that the Leave campaign would not succeed in their target. After all, the Remain camp had several experts backing the benefits of what is known as the four freedoms EU provides to its member states: free movement of goods, capital, services and people. And the whole process, the build-up to the referendum, reminded me of the Finnish referendum back in 1995, when I was able to vote for the very first time and, of course, supported the joint European vision. The political earthquake of the Brexit shook me deeply when the results were announced. The lulled safety, stability and straightforwardness of living and working in Britain had been shattered in one election, one democratic act of voting. Disbelief, frustration, anger, anxiety and uncertainty flooded over me. People around me had their painful responses to the split nation. I didn't meet anyone waving the winner's flag. The political earthquake broke structures that I had taken to be stable and lasting. What would be my way of working with this response? So in this talk, which I've titled When the Bubble Bursts, I will look into the Diamond Sutra as a guide to see how to understand the nature of reality, to see what impermanence, instability and unsatisfactoriness as marks of conditioned existence mean. And I will share my personal experience of working with the effect of this political earthquake of the referendum result and explore how our Dharma practice can be both a resource and a challenge to work with the personal and political earthquakes we all encounter in our lives. So the Diamond Sutra, it namely refers to the Vajra, the diamond thunderbolt. And the diamond thunderbolt is the symbol of indestructibility and irresistible force. It is said that it can break through our doubts and our firmly held beliefs. And Sangharakshita writes, "The diamond thunderbolt of transcendental wisdom pulverizes all conditionings that stop you from seeing the truth face to face." And the famous verse that gave actually inspiration to the whole title of the talk captures this in the following way. "As stars, a fault of vision as a lamp, a moksha, dewdrops or a bubble, a dream, a lightning flash or cloud, so should one view what is conditioned. As stars, a fault of vision as a lamp, a moksha, dewdrops or a bubble, a dream, a lightning flash or cloud, so should one view what is conditioned." As I describe my response to the referendum results, I can clearly see that I had created a bubble of security and safety by relying on political structures. The earthquake effect of Brexit reminds me painfully that the bubble indeed bursts. Even the long-lasting international agreements break down. They are part of the conditioned world. So what does that mean? What is our response when the conditioned reveals its true nature, so to say? When the steady and stable political structures fall apart? All the images given in the Diamond Sutra verse point to the transitory nature of things. The bubble bursts, we wake up from a dream. Flash of lightning illuminates the sky, but just for a moment. Some of these images offer a sense of beauty that is often related to impermanence. If we think of the dewdrops or a cloud, some shake us to see where we developed the thought of vision or bought into magician's tricks in a mock show. I did that in my youth by buying into the idea of free movement in Europe and living out that idea by moving into the UK. I also trusted the permanence of all these agreements and never bothered to acquire any optional paperwork of residence permit or citizenship. Now I've woken to see that my vision was faulty. All these agreements are part of the conditioned world, not permanent and not therefore reliable. So how do I work with my response? As I said, all of us have shared an emotional response of some kind. Many say that the referendum brought a painful experience of feeling rejected or unwelcomed. Some feel that they don't know anymore the country they live in. Some tensions take place even within families or between friends. So how do I live with this? I would say that glossing over them by thinking, oh, I'm a Buddhist, I'm a Dharma practitioner, I should be detached from all this or unaffected, is not a helpful response. My experience is there to be experienced, just as it appears, just as it arises. I suggest that we can apply here what I call a dual view, allowing and acknowledging our response as truthfully and authentically as we can. And for me, that meant simply accepting how angry or even furious I felt, how deeply sad or at times pulled down by insecurity, how all that was present in my experience. But this psychological view is not all that we have. And this is what the Dharma offers us. It offers us another view or vision, another perspective. The conditioned is not to be relied upon. It is only a moksha, only a bubble that bursts. It is impermanent, insubstantial, and therefore unsatisfactory. So how can I apply this Dharmic view at the times when my response is messy and overwhelming? After the referendum, I remember saying to Bodhipakshini in the office, oh, I could just keep wearing my kesa all the time. This is the only passport I have left. You can hear this statement in a pretty naive way and think, oh, Dharma Prabha simply thinks that because she's an order member, things are sorted out for her. This is not what I mean. I try to express the deeper symbolism that the kesa is part of, the three jewels embroidered on it. I was looking for the only ground that stands, the only true refuge that holds. And I want to share a quote from the Dhammapada that captures what I was after with that statement or sentence. Many people, out of fear, flee for refuge to sacred hills, woods, groves, trees, and shrines. In reality, this is not a safe refuge. In reality, it is not the best refuge. Fleeing to such a refuge, one is not released from all suffering. He who goes for refuge to the enlightened one, to the truth and to the spiritual community, and who sees with perfect wisdom the four Aryan truths, namely suffering, the origin of suffering, the passing beyond suffering, and the Aryan Eightfold Way leading to the pacification of suffering. For him, this is a safe refuge. For him, this is the best refuge. Having gone to such a refuge, one is released from all suffering. So this is to say that when we recognize the transitory nature of things we thought were permanent, and we realize that none of these are safe for us to take refuge with, the Dharma offers the safe refuge for us. This is a safe refuge independent of our formal level of commitment in the Sangha. The three jewels, the Buddha, his teaching, and the fellowship of his followers are the only safe refuge we have. But this is not a static quality of the three jewels. It is an active commitment on our part. It is an active process where we step by step recognize our own false refuges and listen to our heart again. Where is my self-refuge? In this active process, I can loosen the ties that I have with the false refuges and move more deeply to the ground that stands. And something of this I needed to actively reflect in the immediate aftermath of the referendum results. So what do I mean by this active process? I'm referring to the liveliness with which we recognize more and more deeply that the Dharma makes sense. Some of us feel that as if we've come home when we hear the Dharma or when we learn about the Buddha's enlightenment. Some of us experience the deeply meaningful connection and friendship in the Sangha. Something becomes alive, something resonates with us, something inspires us. And our response may be imbued with a feeling tone, or it may be a moment of clarity in our vision. Nonetheless, something in us responds to the three jewels, and that response gives us confidence to take the next step. And when we have a live connection with the three jewels through our practice, we can take a step deeper with the challenge the Diamond Sutra offers. As just all things around us are conditioned and therefore impermanent, insubstantial and unsatisfactory, all this applies to us as human beings as well. As I said earlier, Bhante Sangharakshita writes that the diamond thunderbolt of transcendental wisdom pulverizes all conditionings that stop you from seeing the truth face to face. Above all, Bhante continues, it smashes you as you at the present know yourself to be. So what is then the human being according to the Dharma? I bring you a couple of quotes from Sangharakshita. Buddhism regards a human being as a current of psychophysical energy. It does not think of sentient beings in terms of separate forms of life, one absolutely discrete from another, so much as in terms of separate currents of psychical energy, each of which can associate itself with any form. Energy is primary, form secondary. So that's a vision that does smash our sense of ourselves as we currently know. Currents of psychophysical energy, not separate from each other. Or perhaps we are more familiar with the idea and teaching coming from of thinking a human being through the five skandhas or the heaps or groups that a single individual can be analyzed with. These are being the form, the feeling, perception, mental phenomena, and discriminating consciousness. In this talk, I'm not going to unpack this teaching more. I'm just simply reminding that these are two different ways of actually looking the dharmic vision of what a human being is. Currents of psychophysical energy clustered in these groups or heaps that shape us as we are. And Sangharakshita continues by saying that a man is by nature indefinable. Human life represents a transformation of energy, independence on which any other transformation of energy, mundane or transcendental, can arise. And the law that operates here is karma and karma vipaka, the law of actions and the consequences of actions. And this is a crucial bit, that human life represents a transformation of energy, independence on which any other transformation of energy can appear. and that can be the transcendental, that is the grounding for the transcendental to arise. So this is why we see the transcendental perspective that the Diamond Sutra offers us is so deeply unsettling and challenging. I think we might find ourselves very fond of the four division we've developed as being separate, fixed, and unchanging by our core nature. The sense we have that this is me, this is mine. And now the message the sutra offers us is in a way an earthquake to our own experience. However, if we are willing to admit that our vision is faulty, the verse gives us a strong flavour of freedom and of liberation. Sangharakshita says that for the Buddhist, impermanence can be a source of exhilaration. If things are impermanent, it means that they can change. And if they change, they can change for better. So we can become exhilarated by the endless opportunities and openings thrown up by impermanence. If we get a glimpse of that freedom, openness and liberation from the veil of assumptions that we held together and think this is what I am and this is my history, we can get a taste of the transcendental vision. But this is possible only because the Buddha decided to communicate his awakening experience. And in the morning we reflected on the moment where he was questioning, is it possible for me to teach? Can I communicate that experience that was so profound? And for our good fortune, he did start to teach. He did turn the wheel of the Dharma and set it into motion. And he did that out of compassion for those who have only little dust in their eyes, as the text says. So in a way, underneath it all is the sense of he began to teach the Dharma out of compassion to all of us, out of compassion to the world, for the benefit of many, for the happiness of many. So in a way, despite the deeply challenging nature the Diamond Sutra offers us, where the Dharma is crystallized, despite its painful earthquake-like effect it brings to us, if we allow its truth to become the truth to us, we can remember that the Dharma is taught to us out of compassion. And this is why I also wish to bring into this talk the importance of spiritual friendship, and especially because we are today celebrating, later on, a very special ceremony of spiritual friendship. Spiritual friendship is at the heart of spiritual life. And we would not be able to work with that strong earthquake-like effect of the Diamond Sutra were we not also connected with others who practice, were we not also aware of others who are exploring the same teachings. And the story I want to share is the Buddha's teaching to Meghya, because that highlights the importance of spiritual friendship. So you may remember the story. Meghya is a young monk who found a lovely mango grove during his alms round and wanted to go there to meditate. However, at that moment, his task was to be the attendant to the Buddha. So he says to the Buddha that he would like to go to that mango grove and strive for enlightenment. And the Buddha says, well, look, I'm on my own and, you know, should you not wait until another monk comes and then you could go? But Meghya is impatient and asks, of course, for the second and for the third time, which is then the point where the Buddha says, okay, well, you can go. So there Meghya goes to this lovely mango grove with the whole idea that I would be here sitting, meditating and striving for enlightenment. And what happens? Well, Meghya is meditating with difficult thoughts. It is said in the text that lust, hatred and cruelty manifested in his mind. And with these difficult mental states, he then goes back to the Buddha, and the Buddha gives him a teaching. The Buddha says, When the heart's release is immature magia, there are five things that bring maturity. The first is a spiritual friend, a good companion in the holy life. The second is training in morality and conduct. The third is engagement in appropriate talk. Such talk is unselfish and concerns the heart's release, freedom, and enlightenment. It is talk on wanting little, on contentment, seclusion, energy, morality, meditation, and wisdom, liberation and knowledge and vision of things as they really are. Then the fourth thing that conduces to maturity of heart's release is energy and effort in abandoning states of mind that are lustful, angry, and confused, and the development of clear mental states full of generosity and love. One needs to develop stamina and persistence in cultivating such positive mental states. And then the fifth thing is development of understanding and insight that will eventually lead to the wisdom and insight of the Buddhas. So we've been focusing on the fifth aspect that brings maturity to our heart's release or to our awakening mind. Understanding and insight that will lead to the wisdom of the Buddhas. That is what the Diamond Sutra is offering us. But the first aspect, the spiritual friend, is vital for our growth and maturation. And as the path of friendship leads deeper and deeper realization of the transcendental wisdom, just as we respond to our friends with kindness and compassion, when we fully realize the nature of reality, we can see that at that stage, the only response that is left is compassion, in the sense of transcendental compassion or mahakaruna. So in some ways, the first aspect, spiritual friendship, supports all the other stages of the path. They inspire us to training. Spiritual friends inspire us to train in ethics, to work with our communication, and guide our way of working with mental states. And for me, spiritual friendship is vital. Over the last couple of weeks, I've deeply enjoyed meeting up with friends and hearing from their practice, sharing my own, bringing up dilemmas and themes I need to work with, receiving insightful aspects, how to carry on. The quality and nature of these friendships is precious and different to others. We share aspects of our practice openly and freely, but we also allow the challenging edge of the Dharma to work through these friendships. We've made a commitment to change, and at times, even though I feel very deeply that I really don't want any change at the moment, I want things to be same and steady. I know that through the connection with my friends, I can reconnect and I can be inspired to the longing for freedom, to the longing to realize the true nature of reality the Dharma offers. I would like to take us back to the Diamond Sutra and its verse once more. As stars, a fault of vision, as a lamp, a moksha, dewdrops, or a bubble, a dream, a lightning flash, or a cloud, so should one view what is conditioned. When I allow the glimpse of reality to open, when the bubble bursts, I can easily feel, oh well, there's nothing there. It's all emptiness. The nihilistic tendencies of my mind may conjure up the idea of nothingness. But again, that is being misguided by concepts. Sangharakshita offers a koan for us that captures the nature of emptiness, when he says, the activity of emptiness is compassion. One does not feel compassion for beings because they suffer. One simply feels compassion. This points to the moment when we've seen our faulty vision of separateness, when we've woken up from the dream, when the bubble bursts. We are left with compassion. We are left with transcendental compassion, mahakaruna, that can flow freely and inspire more and more beings towards liberation. Thank you for listening. Thank you.